Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis, as always. And Jim, a little bit of bad leads to potential good here for our good martini. Over the past several days here, you've seen the Obama administration essentially decide to tweak or interpret the law pretty much however it believes it needs to be interpreted for its own benefit. We saw it with the delay of the employer mandate. The law does not suggest that it has that option. The Obama administration did not go to Congress. It just decided on its own to delay the employer mandate. Most people aren't real upset about that, but it does mean the administration is not following the law as it was written. Now we, of course, have Jay Carney kind of flip-flopping about whether we just witnessed a coup in Egypt, because, of course, if it is a coup, current law suggests that we end foreign aid, and the administration doesn't want to do that, which might be a good call, but if it's a coup, it's a coup, and then you have to adjust the law if you would like to change the way we respond to such things. But John Fund, reporting for National Review, as well as folks in some other places as well, saying the overreach potentially here on these issues and some others by the Obama administration may mean the death of immigration reform, because the one thing that conservatives and most people who are worried about border security first have always been concerned about is how serious the administration would be about enforcing this. That's why we got the Corker-Hoven Amendment, and that's why you've got folks in the House saying no legalization till we can affirm that the border is secure, but they worry that Janet Napolitano's got the leeway to determine whether it is secure or not. And now, with the administration basically deciding if it wants to enforce different parts of the law, people are even more concerned that they'll just skip the border security part, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, at the crux of the immigration debate, going back to the, you know, efforts during the late years of the Bush administration, was this sense of folks who wanted to see a secure border basically had no faith that anybody in power was really going to try to keep their word. This goes back to the Reagan amnesty, the late years of the Reagan years, when the attitude was, okay, we'll do an amnesty for the people here illegally, but then we'll secure the border. And unsurprisingly, the border did not get secured. So once you do that, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. Everybody who wants to see a secure border isn't willing to give any ground on this. They're basically, no, we get what we want first, and then maybe we'll talk about a path to citizenship. Well, that same dispute has characterized this debate all through the Obama years and this latest effort here, the Gang of Eight bill. And seeing the administration come out and say, okay, there's a big part of Obamacare that we kept promising and talking about and we said was kind of, you know, fundamental to get the whole thing to work. And now we've figured out that implementing it is going to be hard. And so it's going, because, you know, we were all for this idea until it got hard. And now because it's hard, maybe in a year we'll get around to doing it. And everybody who's looking at this and saying, wait a minute, this is the same, you know, the same approach you can take to the immigration bill, that basically the administration, you know, which is already demonstrating, you know, when Obama more or less kind of, you know, implemented his own version of the Dream Act, you know, last summer, in a fairly blatant attempt to curry favor with Latino Americans and the Hispanic vote running up to the presidential election. I mean, this president basically is not afraid to ignore laws he doesn't want to enforce and to play, you know, by his own set of rules and ignore what the actual written law says. Our entire intervention in Libya was pretty much illegal under the War Powers Act, and nobody in Congress really bothered to enforce it. Now, some people have argued the War Powers Act is unconstitutional, yada, yada. But anyway, the bottom line is, folks on the right have really no reason to, and for that matter, the left, have no reason to believe that the administration will enforce any law that is politically inconvenient for it. So if your entire support upon this, the Gang of Eight bill, is dependent upon border enforcement, and you don't think the Obama administration really wants to, you know, enforce the border all that strictly or all that tough about it, then you've got no reason to vote for it. You know, that basically Obama has broken government because right now nobody trusts him to, you know, enforce the laws as they're written. So why is this a good martini, Jim, as our democracy is collapsing? Because it lessens the likelihood of the passage of a bad immigration bill.
And that's good. And we like that.
And that's good. Yes.
And hopefully the House will move in that direction. On to martini number two now, Jim. And we've characterized the stagnant job market and yesterday's bad martini. Now we look at the economic situation in this country from another bleak perspective. The number of Americans receiving subsidized food assistance from the federal government is now at 101 million people, roughly a third of the U.S. population. The Department of Agriculture reporting that a total of 101 million people currently participate in at least one of the 15 food programs offered by the agency at a cost of $114 billion in last fiscal year. That means the number of Americans receiving food assistance is higher than the 97,180,000 full-time private sector workers, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics at the Department of Labor. So, I mean, we've chronicled this dramatic rise in the number of people on the SNAP program and other food assistance programs. But, Jim, when you characterize it this way, talk about going underwater.
Yeah, it really is a stunning figure. And just kind of observe that somewhere along the line, this is how the approach of the Obama administration and its allies is very different from what we've seen before. I don't think there's anybody in the country who would argue that we shouldn't have food assistance. We don't want kids going to bed hungry in this country. We want everybody to have enough sustenance to get through the day. We don't, you know, nobody has that much of a problem with that. The issue is who needs it, who genuinely needs it, and is there a sense of fraud being in the program? I have a really hard time believing there are 100 million Americans who are one SNAP or EBT card away from going hungry, even in this economy. And so we're left looking. And the other thing is that even if, you know, we have this program to take care of people, you should want to not be on government assistance. There's a reason there used to be a bit of a stigma to it. There's a reason there used to be a bit of shame to it. Because, you know, as everybody says, we want a safety net, but we don't want a hammock. We want something that is there for people who genuinely need it because we are a compassionate and caring people. However, it's not really meant to be income supplement. It's not supposed to be paying it for people who can afford it. And I have a very tough time believing that there are 100 million people in this country who are incapable of feeding themselves. Because if so, then this is the worst economy ever. We didn't see those kinds of numbers back during, you know, the depressions of the 70s. There's nothing even remotely comparable in it. And while we've been in quote-unquote recovery since 2009, it's fairly obvious that if your food stamp usage just keeps going higher and higher and higher, then it means the opposite of recovery. It means things are getting worse and worse and worse. So something is not adding up here. And one of the problems is I think we've lost the stigma to it. And it's kind of become this very widespread mentality of, well, look, if the government's going to give it to me, why shouldn't I take it? And the answer is the government should not be giving it to people willy-nilly. They should be generally trying to verify people's income and verify, oh, by the way, what did we just say the big problem with Obamacare is? That they can't verify people's income? Was that what the whole point of the exchanges was there? You know, you see this kind of common thread running through all these things. The current operation of the federal government under President Obama is just to do as much as possible to get as much benefits out there as possible to people, regardless of whether or not they genuinely need it, in order to get people used to the idea that government's job is to give them stuff, take care of them, and all that stuff. And I think this eats away at the social fabric. I think it eats away at the work ethic. I think it eats away at this notion that, look, you're not just here to collect stuff, you know, collect benefits from the government, watch TV, and surf the internet, and you know, do whatever people are doing all day. You're here to work. You're here to do something. You're here to have a career and to have a dream and to work towards that. That's kind of what's been the driving America. That is what has run the American economy for generations. And you have this nagging sense that it's kind of eating away at us. It's kind of this, you know, crumbling from within, because a lot of people are taking the much easier path of sitting back and waiting for the government to cover costs that they probably could cover themselves if they were willing to take a job that, you know, may not pay all that great, may not be all that glamorous, but, you know, would give them a certain amount of self-respect. We are effectively having to refight the argument of the welfare reform debate of the mid-90s. And it's kind of frustrating to see one of the great policy reforms of our generation being undermined right before our eyes.
Perfect contrast to this mounting number of folks on food assistance was the maiden speech in the U.S. Senate by new South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, who was kind of telling his personal story on Monday. And one of the things that was most compelling was his single mother working multiple jobs 16 hours a day because she was absolutely determined not to be dependent on government assistance in raising her kids. And that's the mentality that made this country what it is, and hopefully more people will embrace that. On to martini number three now, Jim, and as a native New Jerseyan, if that's the right term, I'm sure you have special feelings about this story. This comes from the New York Post, And it says, it's official. John Corzine, he, of course, the former New Jersey senator and governor, will not be cuffed over MF Global's improper handling of customers' funds leading up to the commodity brokerage firm's spectacular collapse in late 2011. Federal investigators have found no evidence that the disgraced Wall Street titan broke the law. According to a source familiar with the probe, after 18 months of investigation, the criminal probe into John Corzine is now being dropped. There is no evidence of criminal wrongdoing, despite the fact that there was misuse of some $1.6 billion in customer funds, Jim. So I'm just sure this was the result of a thorough investigation that just couldn't find the evidence.
Well, it certainly seems like they took enough time to do this, and I don't know that there's any, you know, malfeasance or incompetence on the part of federal investigators. It does seem kind of striking that one-time head of Goldman Sachs Wall Street titan John Corzine, who was able to go to New Jersey and basically buy a Senate seat and then buy the governorship from his enormous personal wealth and spending, you know, oodles of money per vote in order to secure the nominations and ultimately go on to win the general elections in those races, at one point allegedly considered a strong contender to be Treasury Secretary in a Obama administration, completely mismanages his firm and manages to lose oodles of money for his clients, and he's allowed to claim incompetence. And maybe he really is just that incompetent. I just got you know, unnerving that somebody who was, you know, once capable of great successes suddenly, you know, falls flat on his face. I've read some profiles of the former governor who kind of speculate that having been humiliated or very much given a great serving of humble pie from his defeat by Chris Christie in 2009, that there was a certain risk-taking appetite on his part, that he was not quite desperate, but that he really wanted to make a name for himself, and thus he was pushing the envelope and taking bigger and bigger risks when running MF Global. And by the end of it, everybody else was calling him an MF because he'd lost so much of their money, and the whole program had collapsed there. So once again, bad management from John Corzine isn't that stunning based on what we know of him being a governor and a senator, but it is kind of frustrating to see that he can, you know, claim incompetence. And, you know, federal investigators, presumably after a very thorough look, have concluded, yes, John Corzine was not criminal, just incompetent.
Wow, that's something to hang on your resume. The Post does point out, though, that Corzine is facing civil charges from the Commodities Futures Trading Commission in connection with what the Post says is illegal tapping of MF Global's funds. So we'll see if anything materializes out of that. But more fun from politicians in New Jersey, Jim. I'm sure you're shocked.
Well, I think New York really is giving the Garden State a run for its money. I mean, they can look and say, look, we got rid of Torricelli, okay? We got rid of McGreevy. Although I guess in this current era of comebacks, I guess it's just a matter of time, right?
You better hope not. Yeah. Some of these characters, wow. Jim, another fascinating day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Wednesday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.